Hey guys, it's your host Julian. This week's guest is Samurai Jack art director Dan Kroll. I want to give a special shout out to all the patrons that help support this podcast: Bill, Brent, Brittany, Eight-Legged Bird, and Jacob. Thank you all so much for your support. It truly means a lot. If you want to become a member of our Patreon channel and help support the podcast and get all of these episodes early and ad-free, follow the link below and sign up today. Now, let's get on to my chat with Dan. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to What's My Podcast. My name is Julian. Today, I'm joined by Dan. Dan, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you.
Oh, thank you. So in a non-stalkerish way, man, I've been trying to get Dan, ladies and gentlemen, on here for quite some time because he and a gentleman named Scott Wills helped bring us one of the greatest cartoons, and in my opinion, the greatest cartoon of all time that came from Cartoon Network Studios, Samurai Jack. So before we delve into those three episodes, I would love to know, how do you get on Samurai Jack with Scott and Gendy and a whole bunch of the other crew?
How did I get on the crew?
Yeah.
Well, I started working with Gendy on Dexter's Laboratory. It was my third job in the animation industry. And I came on, I did a background test for Dexter's Laboratory. It just was the coolest thing happening in animation at the time. And I needed a job. And I thought, why not try? And he hired me to do background design. And I went over there and I met the whole kind of like CalArts crew, mostly CalArts crew of Gendy and, you know, Paul Rudish and Craig McCracken and Lou Romano and Don Shank and Mike Moon and all those guys who kind of went off to the, you know, the four corners and sort of formed the animation industry after that. I just got to like hang around them and learn from them. And this was super exciting. It was like a lifestyle, you know, being on Dexter's Lab. And then that kind of ran its course, and then it went right into Powerpuff, and just we worked as a unit, you know, for all through Dexter's, all through Powerpuff. And then I think Powerpuff ended, and then it was Gendy kind of like wanted to make a new sort of a different show than he'd done before, and it was kind of just the same crew, like, hey, you know, let's work on this. Yeah, that's how I got in, is just from the Dexter's Lab days and kind of being friends and being part of the gang.
Oh man, thank you for sharing that. So the fans know my love and adoration for backgrounds. When it comes to animation, backgrounds are hands down my favorite. I love world building and what you guys can do to, like, it's always cool to see the characters. I mean, everybody's there for the characters, but I, especially in Samurai Jack, because it felt like not one episode and sometimes not even one scene felt like the same episode. It was just a different background. It was a different world that you guys were building. I know we're jumping crazy from you getting on a Dexter to go to Powerpuff Girls, Samurai Jack, and now we're talking backgrounds. But what was it like working on Samurai Jack with just like every episode? It could have been Arctic, it could have been a savanna, it could have been a swamp. What was it like being a background guy and being the art director with Scott, you know, changing the scenery in almost every episode?
It was super cool, super exhausting. It was really well timed for me because I, you know, by around that time, I started to really get into international travel, which my wife got me into. And we had been, you know, I had never traveled before growing up and never really left the US. And then I met her, and she, by the time I met her, she'd been around the world already, to like Tibet and Africa and, you know, China and just India. And so we started traveling a lot, and I just went with her to like Turkey and Romania and Poland and, you know, Costa Rica, just everywhere as much as we could, and just got absolutely fascinated by different environments and different architecture and different cultures. And we just was like teeming with that, you know. So then to go on to Samurai Jack, where it's a sort of traveling show where every episode, you know, could be whatever and was supposed to be whatever. Now I think it's like traveling shows are like, they're just so difficult to produce because there's no reuse on any of the backgrounds. But at the time, everybody was just having so much fun. And there's actually, Gendy is so cool to have built in a development phase of each TV episode, because a lot of times in TV, you have development before the show goes into series, where you kind of work on, you know, the main character's house and the grocery store they go to or whatever. And that's it. And then once the series starts, you just make it. But on Samurai Jack, there was a little, even if it was like a day or two before every episode started, before they started boarding, just to kind of like think of like the location. And I would get a couple of days to think of a new location. And I would just sort of like call on travels and places I've been and things I've seen to try to, to make everyone like a little different. So just, it was super, it was like, just like a perfectly mesh, you know, like to be working on that and sort of like thinking about it at the same time. And it was super exciting. You know, I never got never got tired of it, even though it was like a crazy, crazy amount of work.
Oh, I can imagine. I mean, like I said, it's visually stunning. I mean, everything upped one another. The voice acting up, the artwork up, the back. I mean, it was a perfect show from start to finish. With you not traveling at all, and then you meet your wife at that time, and then you guys just start going everywhere. Was there one part of the world that fascinated you the most, whether it was architecture, whether it was the culture, whether it was the religion? I mean, what one
Think it
stuck out the
was
most to you?
just Turkey. We went to Turkey. It was one of our first trips. And it just was so foreign at the time to anything, having like grown up in Simi Valley and like, I went to college in Iowa. And other than those two places, I didn't really know much. I'd kind of been up and down the California coast, but then to get on a plane and then fly to Turkey and get off and walk around Istanbul and these sort of like markets with, the minarets and the prayer calls and it just absolutely mind-blowing. And it really felt like a foreign planet, to me. So then to like come back from a trip like that and then have somebody go like, hey, we're making a show that's like crazy alien culture and foreign planet. It just was not a far stretch, to sort of, to kind of, what was the question?
Oh no, just what country or what part of the world
Yeah.
probably influenced you the most?
Turkey was the first one that really blew me away and just felt so completely foreign. I mean, Europe, like our culture kind of comes a bit from Europe. Things look recognizable, but it just felt, wildly exotic and different. And especially we went to like backwoods places, like really, really rural, remote areas and saw not just the big fancy cities, but like farmhouses and cave dwellings. And yeah, so it is, yeah. I always wanted to go back there. I only went one time.
Oh, I mean, I gotta imagine you can have a trip here pretty soon, and you can get back out there. So I told you I wouldn't get too personal with you, but this is probably the most personal question I'll ask you. Is your wife an artist too?
Yeah, she's a photographer and a ceramicist.
So what is it like? My art for me is my food. You know what I mean? I cook for a living, so that's my palate, no pun intended. But what's it like traveling? I mean, do you have a sketchbook everywhere you go? Obviously, your wife is probably taking pictures as much as she can, but what's it like for you? Are you just jotting down architects? Are you jotting down the people? What's it like for you?
Well, it's changed a lot since our daughter was born. She's 14 now, so my wife and I have been together for 20, 30 years, long time. So we traveled for a long, long time before she was born. And when we didn't have kids, when we traveled, we actually would take two separate vacations. And this was kind of like before everybody had a phone. And if you wanted the email, you'd have to go to an internet cafe. So we would fly. She would go where she wanted to go, and I'd go where I want to go. And she would go to Russia and photograph, whatever wood churches in Siberia or something for 2 weeks. And I'd go to Budapest and walk around and drink beer and draw people and architecture. And then we would meet each other. I'll meet you. We'd email, I'll meet you at this hotel in Warsaw in August, and we hadn't seen each other for a while. And we would kind of like reconvene and just like so much to share, and then try and then take a together trip for like a week or two. It was great. But then, when you have a kid, it's like it just changes the nature of that. As soon as we had a kid, we were like a family unit and we would travel together. And mostly you're managing your kids' needs. So it changed a lot that way. And then your kid kind of gets older and we've dragged her with us on all these travels. So she's been all over also. And you just, as they grow and they change, their needs and their interests grow and change. And really they're kind of driving the ship and you're sort of their like concierge.
With that being said, you obviously said it was Istanbul, Turkey was your go-to spot. What were some of the things that you wanted to get into Samurai Jack? Was it buildings? Was it the people? Was it the clothing? Like what would you want to like kind of pull from Turkey to kind of influence your drawings from Samurai Jack?
I mean, I think that was one episode. I think, just like patterns, like he just, I mean, it was a really long time ago, Samurai Jack. And I think the thing that I came back from Turkey with was patterns, those sort of like, the tiles and the just intricate, wavy, all over everything. And then like kind of those, just their architectural influence, sort of dome shapes, it's like it's just a shape that doesn't exist in, where I'm from. And those kind of two things together just sort of like, I mean, cartooning is so much about like distilling big ideas into like very concentrated a couple of things to sort of like sell a mood or a feeling. So it's kind of was like that, like just taking like domed rooftops and arched, you know, sort of like Moorish architecture or that Turkish architecture with patterns. And just a, yeah, and kind of like that feeling of exoticness that things are sort of different, you know, because we're making it, obviously you're, if you're from there, it's not exotic to you, it's just normal, but
Home,
from
yeah.
we're making it in Burbank, and you know, I'm a Southern California kid, so trying to just like put those shapes and patterns in and silhouettes in a show that you watch it and you just feel like, oh, that's an exciting, interesting, unusual place, you know, and then you're adding technology like Aku sort of shapes and pipes and made up language and stuff, and it, intermingling it with those shapes to sort of add like a sci-fi, just to kind of like make it even weirder and more, you know, mysterious looking.
Oh, yeah. Well, thank you for breaking that down. So before we rotate into the episode you choose, I chose that you want to talk about, we did a little talk about this before we hit record, but I'm a huge fan of Scott Wills, your partner, for Samurai Jack, for art directing. What is it like working with Scott? Like I said, obviously you told me some cool stuff about his painting and his style and everything like that. But what was some of the cool things getting to have like a partner to kind of art direct the series with?
Just seeing what somebody could take your, like what you see or what I see in black and white. Like I'm mostly a black and white person. I'm much more comfortable drawing than I am painting. I've started painting a long time ago, mostly like out of necessity, and any color skills I got were always sort of inspired by what Scott did to my work on Samurai Jack. I just love his palette. But just seeing what somebody can take in your black and white mind and then, you know, transform it into like a place with like light and atmosphere and mood and mystery. And also the editing, you know, because like when you only draw, I learned through working with Scott that the amount of detail that looks good in a drawing is completely different than what looks good in a painting. Because you can have a big empty space in a painting and fill it with mist or wash or, you know, haze or something, and it's beautiful. But in drawing, a big empty space just looks like, I don't know, laziness or empty space. So, so I learned a lot through him, like what to, you know, when to stop drawing and what is going to look good in color, and to think about the finished product. But it just also just amazement to see like how, you know, because it's so when I would draw it, it's so cartoony and flat and sketchy because I always have like a sketchy line. And just to see like how what like a lush, beautiful place it can become, you know, when somebody else, you know, collaborates on it. That was kind of, yeah, it was great. I mean, I've always loved working, and it makes you look good. Like no matter what you draw, if Scott paints it, you look like a star. So.
Yeah, that's a guy, that's a great guy to have on your side. Now, like I said, I love hearing stories about folks that that you get to work with. And Scott is a guy that I've heard a couple stories about. You know, Randy Myers, I believe, told me one. Robert Alvarez told me some off the air of just about how cool of a dude he is and everything like that. But do you have a favorite story or a favorite moment you got to share with Scott? It doesn't have to be a Samurai Jack, but does anything come to mind as far as getting to hang out with Scott?
not really. I mean, we didn't really hang that much. We worked a lot. And you know, I was in the back, I was in back as in the background department. I was art directing the black and white background design. He was art directing the color. We worked a lot. We barely left our cubicles when we did work, and we didn't really hang outside of work. So yeah, I mean, most, I think the funniest things and the best part of that job and every job working under Genndy is watching the pitches, because they're board-driven shows and people would come in and pitch their storyboard, and it's like a personal artwork. It's not like a script that they inherited that they have to kind of make the best of. This was like every like the best board artists, the funniest people in the, you know, the in the industry pitching their personal stories and kind of just being in a room part of a crew and just watching that kind of magic and just laughing and stuff. Those are kind of, those are sort of like the times that we shared were sort of like the workspace. But you wouldn't, you know, you don't hang out with everybody on a crew. Like there's a couple people that you sort of see, but you know, mostly it's a workplace and you kind of do your work and hang out, maybe go to lunch, but then you go home after that and hang out with your family and stuff.
Gotcha.
Me anyway.
I'm the same way. I'm that guy that's always looking like, man, how early after getting to this place? Is it, you know, safe, or you don't look like an asshole for saying, all right, man, I'm kind of ready to go home and sit in my PJ pants and sit in my recliner. I'm that same person. I just want to be home. I'm a homebody. I love my people because we work so long. You know, you know, so many other people in the animation industry, so people work so long and they have to be so far away from their home for so long to be able to afford their home. You know what I mean? So you want to enjoy it as much as you can. With that being said, does any storyboard pitch stick out to you as being like, oh my God, that was like one of the funniest things I've ever seen?
Yeah. The one that Aaron and Chris Riccardi did of Jack.
Please say Chicken Jack.
I haven't rewatched these since they came out. It's like distant, vague memories, but so as to which episode it was, but there's one where I think like Jack kind of like, it's like an Alice in Wonderland thing. And he kind of ends up in some apartment underground. And whatever the first version of that was the, still to this day, the funniest thing I've ever seen in my life. I think most of it didn't make it onto the screen because there's, I forget what season it was, but there's a thing where you work on a show that after a while, you kind of get sick of the characters and start to hate them and want to abuse them. And there was a lot of that. And it would just, And it was just, it was a hysterical abuse of Jack in like very not Samurai Jack ways that probably didn't end up on the screen, but was just killing everybody in the room.
That's awesome. Those two guys actually have probably one of my, in my opinion, I think it's the funniest episode in Samurai Jack, but it was Chicken Jack, where Jack gets turned into a chicken. And it's the entire episode of him trying to figure out how to turn back into Samurai Jack.
It might've been that one. It just was like, you know, it just was like super weird, you know, because it's the usual Samurai Jack is like, he's doing good and battling things and setting things right. And it was just bizarre and hysterical and trippy and and all of that.
Oh, thank you for sharing this. So you gave me three episodes, and one of those episodes you had just alluded to. I got to pull up my notes real quick. And that episode you're talking about, the Alice in Wonderland, is called Jack is Naked. We'll get to that one in just a second. Actually, we'll start with that one because this was the most, I know you said you hadn't seen some of these in quite some time, but this one, watching this one, I got UPA vibes just because of the colors you guys chose or the board artists chose that Scott helped with as well. It was very UPA-esque with the character designs, with the colors, with how everything kind of flowed. I mean, there's this scene. I don't know if you remember. I'm pretty sure you do. Do you remember a UPA film called Jaywalker?
No, but maybe if I saw it.
Okay, so it's just this guy, he just loves jaywalking, and he would stop traffic, and all these beautiful cars, red, blue, green, yellow, would just come, and then he would walk in front of them, and it would stop, and then he would get arrested, and then he would do it all over again. He would find these intricate ways of jaywalking and stopping traffic, and just, you know, so there's this scene where all of these cars are coming, and Jack's kind of trying to navigate through that, and that was the first thing that I thought of was, oh, shit, I wonder if that was an homage to UPA. But the episode that you had mentioned, like I said, was Jack is Naked, and that's that Alice in Wonderland inspired or paying homage to episode of Jack. Why was this one of the ones that you picked? Obviously, you said it was one of the funniest boards you'd ever seen just a second ago. But was there anything that else stuck out?
I think just because, you know, after a while, the traveling of, you know, because there was a lot of episodes and you're traveling and sometimes you have an amazing idea for a new location and sometimes you don't. And it's like more pine trees, more, you know, empty, you know, desert vistas or whatever. And it just was like a place where it just kind of like, oh, there's something different, like weird psychedelic, you know, talking flowers and, you know, mushroom houses. And so it just was fun in that way. And I love that stuff anyway. And there just was not really any room in Samurai Jack universe for that because it was so kind of like serious in sci-fi. So just to get like weird and go in a completely different direction after many, many episodes of kind of doing like, you know, keeping the central storyline going is just a fun diversion.
Now, obviously this is damn near 25 years ago, give or take, was when this one came out. So it'd probably be a little hard to remember, but obviously every show has their do's and do nots with characters, with, you know, motivations, emotions, you know, what they can and can't do. Would something like this one be kind of hard to get through because it was breaking that norm? It wasn't like mountains or Saharas. It was just this weird, trippy, you know, psychedelic type of episode. Would something like this be a little hard to get through?
I don't know. Cause I wasn't really that involved with the storyboards, you know, that might be a better question to ask a story artist, I'm sure that there were, you know, I think Gendy was always very on point on like she's a just being a great leader and like this is the vision, this is the character. And when you make in a show, a lot of people have to like come together and kind of like, you know, do storyboards and do writing and do different things. And you really need somebody that's like, this is the vision, this is the character. Otherwise it kind of just gets like all over the place. So I'm sure, I'm positive that there were like do's and don'ts with like what Jack do, what would he not do. But that happened kind of in the storyboard department. And we were so cranking so hard, all of us in our different departments, that other than the pitches going and watching like the final product, I really didn't see what was like what led up to it. We were just too busy like in doing mountains of drawings in the
Got you.
background.
And one of those other episodes that you had mentioned, this one gets brought up. It's like top three episode for almost every Samurai Jack fan, and that's Jack and the Scotsman. Why was
Oh yeah.
this one so? I mean, I know why it's so special to me, but as somebody that got to work on this series, what was so special about this one for you?
Well, for me, it almost has nothing to do with the actual episode, although I did really love it and I love that character. And having like a machine gun for a foot is pretty genius.
Yeah, pretty
But I was,
badass.
for some reason, it was like a lull in production. It was Christmas break or whatever, and I asked if I could go to Scotland and still be paid, and they said yeah. So I took like a week and went to Scotland and just drew like, you know, grassy mountains and fog and black lakes and all that stuff that you see there. And, you know, those kind of like those stone with the carvings in them, and just kind of made observational stuff and brought it back and made an episode. And, you know, it was inspiring and it was fun, but that was just a great memory and super cool of them to let me do that.
That sounds pretty cool. Now, I know you said each department was kind of who you guys would hang out with. Now, did you know Brian and Mark Andrews at that time?
A little bit. I mean, again, like I didn't hang out with them. They were in the board department. So like around the office, and not Mark, just Brian.
Okay.
And I worked with Brian on other Getty projects over the years.
The only reason I bring them up is because I can't remember who told me, but somebody said they were going to go to Scotland, and I guess he was either Brian or Mark gave him like, "Oh, these are things you have to do." So I didn't know if that was something that like, "Hey, I'm going to Scotland," if they gave you some things to do or
No, I
some.
don't think at that time I talked to them about it at all, but I know that they are very big into their Scottish heritage.
Yeah, they shared a photo with me with them in their kilts, I think at Mark's wedding or Brian's wedding.
Yeah.
Now with this episode, like I said, we won't go so deep into this because this has been some time since you've watched it. Did you get to sit in on any of the voice actors, any of their sessions or anything like that for any
No,
episodes?
never. Yeah,
No.
never. Especially not as an art director and not as the like the background, because I think they're just there's work to do, and there's just those rooms are small and there's like it's kind of like a lot of kind of chaotic already. So they usually wouldn't have somebody like that in there. Sometimes if some really popular person came into the studio, you'd sort of hang in the hallway. Like there was a time when Mr. T came in and I ran into William Shatner in the elevator, and you know, but you kind of see him around the hallways, but I didn't ever get to go in any of the recordings.
No, do you ever get to ask Mr. T or Mr. Bill Shatner or anything?
No, because they're like swarmed by people. It's more
Yeah,
like they're
I
walking through the, you know, and there's like 200 people leaning over their cubicles, just kind of drooling, and their eyes are glazed over because it's Mr. T.
Dude, Mr. T, man. That was one of my grandpa's favorite shows was the A-Team. I remember watching that one with him with every summer we would go up there and spend time with him. We would watch the A-Team. So who came up with do you remember the designer that would have been for the Scotsman? Was that a Craig Kelman type of thing or?
I couldn't say. I mean, it was a team of people, and I don't even remember what season it was, and people kind of came and went, but there was like, you know, definitely, I don't know. And I don't want to get it wrong because
Yeah.
honestly, it's a big blur. For me, it was like a group of people that started at Dexter's and ended at Samurai Jack, and people kind of came and went, and I couldn't even tell you who for sure was on any one of those shows at any given time because it was so long ago.
Where does Samurai Jack rank for you as far as your career goes?
Definitely a highlight. I mean, it was incredibly inventive. I think it just the notoriety of it, people love it. I mean, people love Dexter's Laboratory and they love Powerpuff and other things, but they fucking love Samurai Jack.
Oh
And it's
yeah.
neat to be a part of that, you know. So yeah, it's definitely a highlight, and I learned a ton. And like I said, it was like a big time in my life for travel, and I was just pouring that into the work. And to have it like in recognition, and the only awards I ever won were for that, you know. So it was definitely a highlight, even though it was forever ago.
Obviously,
just like
I don't know.
Creative, yeah, just like the pure creative environment. Like over time, the industry has changed a lot, and it is not now like it was back then. And it's not the same. I mean, it really didn't feel like a job as much as it felt like a, you know, just kind of like weird art clubhouse.
That's really cool. It's like you didn't. It's like, I get to do this is what the vibe feels like. When I listen to you talk, it's like, it's not I had to do this. I got to do Samurai Jack. That's what I feel like whenever you're talking about it.
Absolutely.
Now, with this one, I've heard from so many of you guys that I've had on that, especially like Dexter, Powerpuff Girls, those early, early days of Cartoon Network when, you know, post What a Cartoon and everything started going to series, that was like the most free and the most... the most time that they had no notes.
Too free sometimes.
All right, as we take a pause for the cause, if you haven't yet, you should check us out on all social media platforms by searching at In My Head Pod. There you can see who we've got coming on, and if you feel so inclined to, you could submit a question to be asked. Now, let's get back to the show. You got any stories about it being too free? Andy told me a really, really cool one, but if you got one, I'll let you share it first, and I'll tell you Andy's.
I mean, I think it just was like, yeah, Dexter's Laboratory, especially, it was really the early days, and it was 100% board driven. And I did two storyboards for that show. And all you had to do to get a board was just present a concept to Gendy. I think one of them was like, hey, I got an idea for what if Dexter invents a robot that tries to kill him, like 2001 Space Odyssey. And Gendy's like, sounds good. See you in 6 weeks. I don't think there was an outline, or if there was, you didn't really follow it. You just have an idea. And I think it was 6 weeks to do a board. And then the other one was like this old movie called Fantastic Voyage, where they shrink down to microscopic and they go in the human body. What if Dexter does that and, you know, ends up in, he thinks he's in DD, but I think he's in the dog or something. But it was like, yeah. And it really was like, no. And then you'd come back with your board and you put it up and you'd pitch it. And then people would laugh or they wouldn't. And Gendy would make notes and you'd fix it. But like that 6 weeks and what you came back with was just artwork. It was, you know, for F. cartoonists. And it was, and sometimes you were responsible and did the work. Sometimes you procrastinated and did it all in the week before. I think a couple times it didn't get done at all. There was just like a big hole in the, you know, like, because we're young and hanging out and having fun. And, you know, cartoons were fun, but other stuff was fun too. So I think there was a couple times where shows maybe just didn't materialize, and then it's like Gendy working with a bunch of toddlers even though they were the same age.
Oh, that's so great. Now I know I wanted to have you on for Samurai Jack, but I really want to stay on Dexter for just a second. What, when you got to do those two episodes you were talking about boarding, was that the first time you ever got to storyboard pitch?
It was the first time I got to board in that board-driven way. I'd storyboarded once before. My very first job in animation was before I went to Hanna-Barbera and worked with Gendy and those guys. It was at Klasky Schupo. I had a job on the show called Duckman doing background design. Mm-hmm. And then that ended and I had a job on a show called Ah Real Monsters.
Love it.
And I did background on that. And I wanted to do storyboarding because I didn't originally want to do backgrounds. That was the only job that they had. I wanted to do character design. So the storyboard opening came up and I took it. But at that time, storyboarding meant they had already, that studio anyway, they had pre-recorded their whole episode. And you had to listen on a Walkman on an audio cassette and basically storyboard to the sound, you know, to the voices that were already recorded for the episode. So even though it was storyboarding, it was like an absolutely kind of like polar opposite experience, like of the freedom and the creativity of like telling a story. Like the story is told, you really are just like doing mouth shapes and playing, like, you know, the characters' voices, rewind, play, rewind, play, rewind, play. Is that an O or an A? Rewind, play. It's a very draftsman-y as opposed to just like, we'll see what you come up with, you know.
What was that pitch like for Dexter? I know that's a long time ago, but does anything stick
out?
I
have
to
a
that
clear
day?
Memory because I did not know what the hell I was doing. I was very, very excited. And I remember, especially in the Fantastic Voyage episode, I was super into Wendy Carlos at that time and like the music from Clockwork Orange and the Hooked on Bach or the Switched on Bach albums, and that sort of like, you know, Moog Bach sound. And there was a whole sequence in the middle when Dexter goes like in the body and they're swimming through and he sees germs or whatever. It turns to like went in my storyboard pitch, and I drew all this out, and I the storyboard pitch turns into like psychedelic germs, like kind of squashing and stretching and swimming and dancing like Fantasia or something to Wendy Carlos music for like 10 minutes. And then I pitch it and I've drawn it all out of everything. And then Robert Alvarez, who's supposed to direct this thing, he's like, you realize this is like a 7-minute cartoon, right? Like that sequence alone is like three times the length of the entire cartoon. He's like, that was great, but it's not happening. And he was totally right.
That's really cool, man. I like Robert a lot. He's been on here. He's definitely one of my favorite folks that I've ever gotten the chance to talk to. So getting it back to Samurai Jack here. The other episode you gave me was based off of one of your favorite films that your dad showed you when you were very, very young, and you pitched it to Gendy as an idea, and they made it. But before we get to that, what is it like going to pitch Gendy an idea, and then I think all of the episodes that you sent me, he boarded and wrote, and then I think almost all of them, if with the exception of one, I think he directed as well. So what's it like going and taking like an episode and just watching Gendy storyboard it and then direct it, like do everything essentially?
I didn't even know that he boarded or directed those.
Oh, really?
We would kind of hang. We played racquetball a lot, and we would chat, you know. And he loved films, and we would talk about films. And so I didn't like. I think again, it was like in the room thing. Like we would chat, and I'd say, "Oh, have you seen this movie?" And he would, you know. I think in that one case, he watched it, and I think he liked it, and was like, "Oh, that'd be like a cool thing to base an episode on." But once that conversation happened, I'm in my room doing, making crazy background. Everybody's doing their thing. And then it's pitch time, everybody pitch time. And you go and I see the episode. So, but I mean, I know just from having worked with him and seen him draw and board that it's like, it's in his head and it just comes out. It's incredibly quick. And it's all built already in there. It just has to get on the paper, but it doesn't seem like he ever struggles with anything.
No, it just seems like it's got to materialize. So what was it about this movie? Ladies and gentlemen, I don't think we gave the name, but it was called Naked Prey. But what was it about this movie that just fascinated you so much?
I think it just like it felt very, you know, it felt very Samurai Jack, because it's like, you know, the premise of it is there's this like white colonialist that ends up in Africa and sort of like becomes captive and escapes and is sort of chased, you know, through the you know, the landscape. And it just, you know, I'm just always been a giant fan of 70s cinema and like the compositions of it, you know, like Andromeda Strain was kind of like a big influence on Samurai Jack, with the split screen and just like that, the compositions and the starkness and the simplicity and the kind of the low budge of it. Just, yeah, I love 70s cinema, and that was like one of the quintessential 70s films, and it just, everything about it seemed very Samurai Jack. It almost seemed like a Samurai Jack episode, you know, made in the 70s. And so I brought it up. We were talking about films and it came up, and my memory was that he like saw it and based that episode on it.
Oh, right on, man. That's really cool. Thank you. So I'm going to do a very horrible way of trying to explain what I'm going to ask you. So one of the things that I loved about Samurai Jack was how it was shot. I hope this isn't like, what's it called? I hope this isn't like a negative towards Gendy, but he always reminded me of the animation version of Tarantino, and Tarantino always reminded me of the film version of Gendy, if that makes any sense. I see so many correlations between the two. They're both fucking brilliant. I mean, when it comes to directing, creating, and writing, I think they're the top people in their fields when it comes to film and when it comes to animation. You know, so hopefully that's not a knock or people don't take that the wrong way. But there's scenes in there that you can tell are like a Gendy scene. And one of the things that set Samurai Jack apart from almost everything Cartoon Network's ever done since before and since then was how it was shot. It was shot like a film, like we were just talking about, like The Naked Prey. It was shot very cinematically. And there was always these scenes you would have these close-ups, like, so it would go very, very tight, black background around it just to accentuate Jack's eyes. Or the one scene in particular was when all of the Imakande, they're starting to fight Jack, and then they've got him up on the tower. And this, in my opinion, it's like one of the greatest scenes I've ever seen in Samurai Jack. So I'll hold it up there. But it is the scene where he's got him in full draw with the bow. He's literally got Jack in his crosshairs. And then Jack's hair is floating in the breeze. And then he releases the arrow, right? The Imakande warrior releases the arrow. And then Jack's hair splits. And then you see the arrow coming. And then the very next scene is the arrow coming across like this. And the entire scene, it looks like it's like a panel, just a side-by-side panel. When I explain that to you, what is that called? Like that style of film or that style of cutting? Does that have a name at all?
I'm not sure if it has a name. I mean, I kind of get the Tarantino reference because I feel like it's very comic booky, you know? It's just, it's very like kind panel of exaggerated, you know, wide, close. It feels like 70s cinema to me. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't know if there's like an actual name for it, but I think it's very like, I think the thing about Tarantino's films is that they're very punchy and impactful, you know, and they're exciting to watch and, you know, unpredictable. So they feel like that, they have that in common. I mean, one thing about Samurai Jack is it was the first show that I worked on where we really pushed scale and slowed it down for environment setups, which I think one of the things that everybody really loved about it, because in your typical kind of Saturday morning Dexter's Lab sort of cartoon, very rarely, maybe one shot for a joke, there'll be like a massive room or something, and Dexter's teeny tiny too, you know, in relative to it, to kind of sell a sense of scale for a gag. But to like slow the pace down and have these like long drawn out shots of just like little teeny Jack on like a massive like cliff with the wind blowing for 3 or 4 seconds or whatever. It's kind of unheard of to spend that time in animation at the time, because it's, you know, it's got to be like so punchy and so quick and so entertaining. So to slow it down, I think, was really a breath of fresh air. So I think it just was like getting filmmaking basically into cartoons where they just used to be cartoons.
No, right on, man. Now, obviously, this is, like I said, almost 25 years ago. But like I said, with Jack, it was so different. Like, this was like the first time, like, I would like legitimately sit on the edge of my seat, because I'm just like, there's no words whatsoever. That's what I loved about Primal, too. I mean, I think until like the last episode of Primal, not one word is spoken, not one word is uttered. And it's one of those things where that's what I thought would set Jack apart, because you can kind of listen to Dexter and Powerpuff Girls. You can hear stuff in the background, right? So you can kind of know where it's going. If you had to turn your back, you're cooking, you're, you know, folding clothes or something like that, you're messing with the kids, you know. But Jack, it's like you can't not watch it, because you could literally turn around for 30 seconds. You have no fucking clue what just happened. It could have been a huge plot and you just missed everything because you turned around. Right. Now, with that being said, do you remember like any kind of possible conversations that might've been had, like, hey, we can't have this many pauses, we can't have this many close-ups, or does anything stick out? No.
No. I mean, I think at that point, Gendy was like, had proven himself and was such a powerhouse that, I mean, he earned the clout like through Dexter's Laboratory and through Powerpuff that, I mean, I think any normal person would pitch Samurai Jack and they just go, no way. But he just, he just is confident and he knew exactly what he was doing and he had proven himself. So he's like, we're doing it this way. And it wasn't, and I think the culture of the studios back then was, I mean, I think even less, you know, stringent, you know. I think they let him, because he's him, do more what he wanted, but also I think it was maybe a little bit more lax back then than it is now. But yeah, I remember that I was like, that's what he wanted to do, and everybody's like, yep, we're doing it. It's but again, like, I wasn't in the room, you know battling that stuff out, so any conversations that there would have been between studio heads or whatever, I wouldn't have been privy to. But just my sense was that it was like Gendy's just like on a roll and we're just like backing him up, you know.
Yeah, right on, man. Now, as we start to wind down here, there are a few more questions that I always like to ask towards the end. And I kind of asked you this one at the beginning, where does, you know, Samurai Jack kind of rank throughout your career? So it's a little bit of a play on that one. But when you sit back and you think about Jack, you know, almost, like I said, almost 25 years ago, it dropped in 2001, prior to September 11th, which, when you think about it, that sounds already like a long time ago anyways. And then you put the context that was 23 years ago, you know what I mean? But when you think about Samurai Jack, is what would you say was like one of the best parts about working on Samurai Jack for you?
I think just working with that group of people, it was like that gang that had mostly been the same gang since Dexter's Lab. And I mean, that was a long time, several seasons of Dexter's Lab, several seasons of Powerpuff, several seasons of Sound. Like we're, good friends for a lot of my good friends still came from that era. And just kind of like gleaning their information and their knowledge, I didn't go to animation school. Like most of the people in that crew, not everybody, but many of them kind of came out of CalArts and had a formal animation education, and I knew nothing. So I just learned constantly from all those people and all these different, and it was super invaluable. So yeah, just like the social aspect, the kind of art club feeling of it, just the time spent doing it. The time just flew by. It was like we all kind of like put our heads down, or the way I feel is I put my head down, on Dexter's laboratory, and worked and had fun and then picked it up like whatever, however many years later. And then it was like, oh shit, I'm old now. And there's just it flew by,
Oh, that's really cool.
it was effortless.
Thank you for sharing that. Now, if you could summarize your experience on Samurai Jack, one word, one phrase, one sentence, one emotion, one thought, what would you say about your time on Samurai Jack?
I think probably like the first word that came to mind was experimentation. Yeah, that's kind of like I think encapsulates kind of like everything that Samurai Jack seemed to be. It was, experimenting with style, with content, with technique, with, everything that like in the industry, what had been done before in the industry, kind of like going against that. Yeah, everything was like new. It was like one of the first, I don't know, maybe somebody has can prove me wrong, but I think it was one of the first self-color shows, where there's not a black outline around everything. That was like a lot of challenges that nobody really thought of, and probably if you didn't work in animation, you wouldn't think of. But like, like Samurai Jack is like a flesh tone, right? And the way that it works, you don't paint every single background. You paint a giant key of a location and ship it overseas, and they do all the layout shots overseas. So if some of that layout shot, like the portion of the sky or whatever, might also be similar in like flesh tone. The sequence comes back, and then Jack's nose disappears against the sky because they're the same color. Because you're not art directing every single scene, you're art directing sort of sequences. So that was like a big experimentation thing, just in having self color and like the technology of it at that point. I don't even know what was really involved, but like that was like a massive, probably seemingly insignificant thing at the time. Like, oh, when you're setting a show up. And you have to make all these decisions like, are there lines? Are there no lines? Are they thick lines? We've been doing lines before. There's crazy lines on the other ships. What if we do no lines? Or, that was like very experimental. And when you're getting into like a big show where you're going to be making many, many episodes and you don't know ahead of time the implications of those decisions, it's very experimental. So, yeah, just simply it was like nobody was afraid to try new stuff and just kind of like figure it out on the fly.
Gotcha. And I'm pretty sure you could pull from quite a few things, but is there one or two things that you picked up on Jack, whether it was learning from somebody you worked with, seeing a technique, seeing just something different that you still use today in your career?
Yeah, just color sense from Scott. I mean, I do my best at color work now. I think I mentioned before that all my color sense, I just thought the stuff that he did was so beautiful and unpredictable. Like I've seen realistic paintings and they're amazing, but they're not inventive like Scott's are, so just like his inventiveness with color and how you can get so many different colors in the same image and have them all read and just feel, juicy and beautiful. And it's kind of where I got the color sense that I have, and I've kind of brought that with me and worked on everything, I've employed it on everything I've worked on since then where color is involved.
All right. And the last question before we wrap up here. If you could go back in time and tell Dan anything in the world when it came to your career, does one thing stick out to you that you would have loved to have known at a younger age?
Yeah, for sure. And that's such a good question. And I tell people this too, because I will sometimes get, students and stuff coming to me for advice. And one of them is that, like, a lot of times, and this was in the industry back then when there were more jobs than there are at this current time. You can't always pick and choose. But I never chose a project to work on based on the longevity of the project. I always picked it on how cool was the thing? How cool did it look? And because of that, I think I had a lot of friends who were like, or people that I'd worked with in the past, or, you know, you're making a living and it's scary and you're hesitant to leave a stable job for some other thing. And, you know, it makes a lot of sense to stay there, but I get bored very easily and I want to kind of work on other stuff. And I guess to have like a leap of faith, it'll be fine. But because of that sort of attitude, over the years, when you look back at your resume, when I look back at my resume, and it's not anything I ever planned, it's just like string of hits, you know, and it's done really well for me in my career as an accidental byproduct. Like, you know, like my resume now is like all these, you know, crazy popular shows, and people are like, wow, I can't believe you worked on all of those. And I'm like, I didn't really plan it like that. They just seemed like the coolest thing going on at the time. And I took a leap and tried to get on it, you know. So yeah, that would be that. And I think nowadays, the thing that I tell people is like, I wish that I had much earlier on branched out as much as I could, because animation has a way of turning you into a assembly line worker. Like, you come out of art school and you have all these skills, and then you get a job and it's like, you're a prop designer, you're a background designer, you're a, you know, cleanup artist, and you get super, super proficient at that one thing. And then your other skills atrophy, and it sort of puts you in a rut. So just to try to fight that and try to branch out as much as you can and do as many types of jobs that you can at every opportunity, and just try to keep those other skills from atrophying if they interest you. I think I spent a lot of years not doing that, and I wish that I had started doing that sooner.
Do you think if you could go back in time, do you think you would still do backgrounds now, or would you want to choose something a little different?
I think I would start doing backgrounds, but I probably would have left after Samurai Jack and started doing more storyboards. I think okay. I haven't done enough storyboards over time. I do them here and there, but it's like not my strongest skill set. I can kind of do it if I get in and I kind of get ramped up, but I feel like the ease of like, I need a job, this is a job, you know, you get, you know, like, oh, now you can art direct, you're art directing, so you're supervising, so you're making more money. So it's it's hard to like, oh, I'm going to turn down more money to take like a storyboarding job to build that skill set. So I kind of got like sucked into that, especially as you get older through life and you get mortgages and kids and all that stuff. So, but yeah, I loved starting with no interest in backgrounds and having it become my specialty. I mean, that's how I think how you get good at stuff, right? You take your weak area and you work on it. But I think I just worked on that one a little too long, maybe.
I don't know, man. I love the background stuff. I love, you know, we're going to get to the Radish Boy that I started watching or I started following along with on your Instagram. But I love the backgrounds. You and Scott, you know, Andy said it best. I mean, you guys were like the dynamic duo when it came to art directing, especially backgrounds and the paintings. You guys were like a match made in heaven. I mean, I can't say one. The only thing that I can say bad about Samurai Jack is I wish it was still fucking going. I wish this thing had 30, 40, 50 seasons. I'd never wanted to see this end, but I'm so glad that you just said it. It's very easy to kind of not get stuck in a rut, but kind of stay with the thing that's going because you're afraid of taking that leap of faith. So I'm glad that it, you know, Samurai Jack came, it went, and then it came back and Gendy and everybody got to finish the story, because that was something that I think would have been a huge detriment to us fans, as well as a huge detriment to everybody that worked on that show, that if it would have been left off with season four the way it would. It was still a beautiful ending, just Jack walking off, but how it ended in season five, fucking perfect. I wouldn't change a single thing about this show. You know, with that being said, I know you're doing some things, especially on Patreon. And like I said, I've loved seeing whenever I pop into Instagram every couple of days, I was seeing stories about this Radish Boy and you were doing polls to see what would happen next. So I would love to know, what's Dan doing now with Patreon? What's Dan doing now with his Radish Boy stuff on Instagram and porting it over to Patreon?
Well, since the animation industry is kind of like contracted a little bit, everybody has a little more free time than they used to. And I'm trying to kind of like get some feelers sort of out in other areas that don't rely on the studio system right now. So I'm kind of playing around with two things. One of them is an animation school on Patreon, because I've I have over the years have like a pretty wide skill set, and like I was talking about earlier, I feel like animation has a tendency to kind of like turn you into this production line assembly. So I have a very cheap, it's like $1 a week Patreon school where I upload lessons on every subject from character design to background design. I'm going to do art direction, viz dev, storyboarding. I've written and illustrated children's books also. I pretty much could just go on forever just doing, they're pretty short assignments. They're pretty low impact. But the idea is that people that there's animation students who can't afford to go to animation school, or people who've gone to animation school but are not in the workforce yet, and there's like a lull where you're not quite ready to enter the industry, but you're done learning. That's a very tough spot to be in. So there's sort of lessons geared for that those people that have a fundamental knowledge of animation already, but maybe are weak in story or weak in color or weak in background design, to just join on, see the lessons. There's a community chat where people can post their drawings, and I'll do notes and draw overs and post them back, and everybody that's joined can see the the notes and stuff. And then there's higher tiers where if people want individual interaction with me, that's available. And then on the Radish Boy one, it's just something I started for fun the other day because I love doing comics and cartoons and characters. And when the industry's healthy and I'm very busy, I don't have time to do that. But there's a lull now, so I broke out the ink pen again also, which I haven't done for years, and it's my favorite. So I'm kind of hooked on ink drawings again. But I also really love very, very narrow parameters because they make you. It's just very fun to have really, really narrow parameters. And I started just posting these stupid comics on Instagram. And in the story part of the app, they have like a really limited, cheesy bunch of like, library music that you can use and really awful sound effects and little stickers you can use like a poll. And I just loved choose your own adventure books when I was growing up. So it kind of just occurred to me on one of them, like, oh, I don't know where to take the story. That's the hardest part for me in writing, is you hit these sort of like forks in the road, where to take the story. So let's put it out to the, if anybody has an opinion. So I put these polls out and people actually voted. And I was like, oh, okay. And it made the story writing really fun. And it's like, oh my God, this is so fun. I'm interacting with people and they're kind of like helping drive the story. And I did it every day for like 2 weeks. And I think I barely missed a day. So now I've kind of taken, there's a pretty sizable story now, and it's kind of getting bigger and more epic. And I was like, hey, I'm kind of starting to like this, even though it started off as just a dumb idea. So I ported the whole adventure so far to a different Patreon with a different name. I'm still going to be posting it on Instagram in story so I can add the music and the sound effects, but I'm going to compile and archive the story on Patreon. And I'm offering some other things on there, like if you pay a little money, you can be in one of the episodes, and I'll just try to think of other little things to put in there to make it fun. But it's mostly free. It's just like a free comic that it's fun to have people go and vote on it and kind of steer the story while I have time to work on it. So.
That's really cool. Like I said, I've enjoyed jumping into Instagram and seeing the stories and being able to vote and kind of
Yeah,
go
thanks
along
for
with it.
voting. It keeps it
Oh,
going. Yeah, and that's
absolutely.
on the Patreon. It's Radish Boy Chronicles. That's the comic. And I have polls on there also. So I'm going to eventually hope to port the whole thing off Instagram onto Patreon, but for a while it's going to be on both. And the animation school is patreon.com, Dan Kroll Animation. So
And
those are the things I'm doing.
we will have all of those links in the show notes and the descriptions below. So, ladies and gentlemen, you can literally scroll down, point click, and it'll take you to Radish Boy as well as Dan's animation page, Patreon, excuse me. And then all the other links for your social media will be in there as well. Well, Dan, like I said, man, this has been a long time coming. I have been a fan of your work for shit. I'll be 35 in August. I've been watching Cartoon Network since 95. So we're going damn near 30 years now. I tell everybody that I have on, because anybody that I've ever had on, I'm a real big fan of what you guys did. You guys gave me a childhood worth living. There's so many characters back here that you got to work on that made me who I am. You guys helped with my sensibility, my humor. You guys helped me make friends when it was very difficult moving from city to city, trying to meet new friends. I connected with cartoons with friends. So many of those things, those weird social interactions I had was kind of nullified just by talking about cartoons, man. You guys played a huge role
Awesome.
in that. So I'll forever be
It's
grateful for you guys.
Well, thank you. It's so amazing to hear that because I think like Me for sure, probably a lot of people in animation. You sometimes forget that people watch them because you get so like sucked into making them and you're hanging out with your friends and you're doing your job and you go home and they go on TV and sure people watch them, but like it's really neat to like come across somebody that they mean something to. So just really appreciate your interest. So thank you.
Absolutely, man. Well, like I said, this has been an absolute blast. He's been Dan. I've been Julian. It's been a What's My Head podcast, and it's been another piece of your childhood. Good night.
Hey guys, it's your resident cartoon junkie Brandon Jones here asking you to have a listen to my Animation Destination podcast. It's an animation celebration podcast, and it's full of all sorts of stuff about anime and cartoons and voice acting and all that sort of thing, and just a really all-around celebration of anything animated. So come on by and check it out. We've got fan episodes of your favorite animes to your most obscure cartoons on Netflix that no one's ever heard of. And just really love talking about it. You can subscribe to us on Spotify and iTunes and anywhere else you can get your podcasts from. So stop on by, subscribe, and stay tuned for the Animation Destination Podcast.
Hey guys, thanks for listening. Before we go, thank you so much for spending a little bit of time with the podcast today. I truly appreciate every download and listen we get. If you're liking what we're doing, drop us a 5-star rating, drop us a review, tell a friend, and I'll see you next week.